This week, NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg has been taking us inside current Supreme Court cases. Today, the justices are revisiting a question the court has actually never answered. What does the prosecution have to prove to convict someone of making, quote unquote, true threats? Nina spoke with the woman at the center of the case.
And it's not that I'm not afraid, no, the terror is still near.
Coles Whalen is a singer-songwriter from Denver, Colorado.
I've toured the United States and the world playing my music, dedicated over 10 years to building my music career. And then I started to receive thousands and thousands of messages from a man I'd never met.
That man was Billy Counterman, who would later be convicted of the crime of stalking and making true threats and sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. His messages to Whalen began in 2010 and then heated up to a full boil in 2014 when police estimate he sent over 1,000 messages to the singer, messages that ranged from affectionate to angry and aggressive and gave the impression he was watching her.
He was clearly mentally unstable. He believed that we were in a romantic relationship that lasted a number of years. He indicated that he was seeing me in person without me knowing, and I was terrified.
At one point, he inquired about her mother after Whalen had just paid her a visit. At another, he wrote, "Die, don't need you." At another, "I'm currently unsupervised. I know, it freaks me out, too." Whalen repeatedly blocked him from her Facebook account, but he would just create new accounts, even contacting her bandmates about her. She became so scared that he would come out of a crowd at her on stage that she stopped publicizing her appearances, varied her routes, on one occasion hired a bodyguard, and bought a pepper spray gun that she keeps with her to this day. Her anxiety only increased when she learned that Counterman had served 2 jail terms for far more explicit violent threats against his ex-wife and family. But even after he was arrested, her fear persisted. Her first panic attack came in Dallas when she was performing in front of about 300 people.
I thought I might be having a heart attack, and I had to leave the stage, which I've never done in all my years of performing. When I went backstage, I mean, I just sobbed for an hour. I felt so horrible. I thought, maybe this isn't worth it. Maybe I shouldn't continue.
The legal issues in today's case are pretty bloodless compared to Whalen's story. The First Amendment protects freedom of speech, but there are exceptions. Obscenity, fighting words, shouting fire in a crowded theater, and what the court has called true threats. The question in this case is whether the definition of a true threat is in the eye of a reasonable beholder, or is it in the eye of the writer of the messages? Lawyer John Elwood, who's representing Counterman in the Supreme Court, points out that his client has been diagnosed as suffering from mental illness and didn't know he was frightening Whalen.
If you look back to really the early days of Anglo-American law, there is a long tradition that if you are going to regulate speech on the grounds that it is threatening, that is based on the intent of the speaker, the knowledge of the speaker, that it's not just based on the way a reasonable person would interpret it. Essentially, what this does is criminalizes misunderstandings.
To illustrate the point, he notes that if you hit somebody accidentally, you may bruise that person, but that's not a crime. But if you hit someone on purpose, that is a crime. The First Amendment, he argues, doesn't allow the state to punish a person based on what a reasonable person receiving the message might think. The question is what the speaker intends. That argument is supported by a variety of civil liberties groups. The Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, for instance, points to several examples of journalists being charged under stalking laws for leaving voicemail messages for public officials or approaching them at home to get responses for stories. And the ACLU argues that political hyperbole can often be mistaken as a genuine threat. Without a demonstration of intent to scare, the organization argues, one person's opprobrium may be another's threat. And the fact that many of these statements occur online further underscores the need for a subjective intent requirement. Colorado Attorney General Philip Weiser counters that under Colorado law, the question is whether an objective person in the situation of the victim would feel threatened. And he notes that's what the trial was about in Counterman's case.
Since the founding of the Republic, we've had threat statutes that have allowed the prosecution of threats without regard to the specific intent of the person making the threats.
And he points to briefs in the case filed by victims' rights organizations and studies that show that for the victim, the psychological effects of threatening behavior is frequently far worse than an actual assault.
We're living at a time of rising demonization and of threats of physical violence and actual physical violence. It's important that the law be able to respond.
Indeed, in the aftermath of the Supreme Court's abortion decision, the justices themselves have experienced a large increase in threats. As for Whalen, even after Counterman's conviction, she couldn't shake her fear.
I truly expected to get back out there and to be the same me, the old me that had been performing all of these years. And a great shock to me was to learn that I was not that person anymore. And I was going to have to find another way to perform as this new person that I had become through this traumatic experience.
Initially, she gave up performing, moved away, found a great therapist, got married, and has two children now. And she has clawed her way back psychologically to now perform again, though sometimes tremulously. She's written a song called Stronger. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
There's power in being the one to